This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. You can now watch our TV show on Free Speech TV every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. FSTV is on Dish Network, DirecTV, and Roku. In just a few years, we as a nation have witnessed a major cultural shift on the issue of gay rights. While there's still a ways to go to achieve full equality, even the nation's highest court has affirmed that LGBT Americans have the same rights to marry as everyone else. It seems hard to imagine that not too long ago, we lived in a country where homophobia was so rampant that it took bizarre forms and deeply impacted many, many lives. A new documentary called Southwest of Salem tells the story of four women in San Antonio, Texas, who were the victims of such serious homophobia that they were wrongly accused of one of the worst crimes imaginable, the rape and assault of young children. The four women, all Latinas, all lesbians, Elizabeth Ramirez, Cassandra Rivera, Christy Mayhew, and Anna Vasquez, have spent years behind bars. My guest, Deborah Eskenazi, is the director of the powerful new film about them, and she now joins me. Deborah Eskenazi is based in Austin, Texas, a documentary filmmaker, radio producer, instructor, and a journalist, and the director of Southwest by Salem. Welcome to the program, Deborah.
Thank you so much for having me, Sonali.
Well, the documentary is extremely powerful, and the story unfolds in a way that just really is terrifying today. And I want to ask you soon about the kind of context of the time that the accusations were made. But first, let's get to the women themselves. There's four women, and I mentioned their names. And through a set of circumstances that you go in detail in the film, they find themselves accused of sexually molesting the nieces of one of the four women. How did you get involved in this story? And I understand you started out interviewing them while they were still imprisoned. How did you get involved in this whole story?
Yeah. So thank you for that intro. So I learned about their case from my mentor from the Village Voice back when I was a journalist in New York. And she brought me the discovery material, the trial transcripts. And she said, you know, these women have been languishing in prison, and I think you should take a look at this case. I had just moved back, as I said, to Texas. And so what I found when I read the trial transcripts of the alleged ringleader who received 37 and a half years in sentence was an extraordinary and systemic homophobia that existed even in the trial. And their indictments were part of an era that now retrospectively we call the satanic sexual panic or the satanic ritual abuse panic of the 80s and 90s, which resulted in hundreds of people being investigated, indicted, convicted of harming children, usually under this alleged rubric of satanic cult activity.
Which sounds so bizarre, but let's talk about that. Basically, through, you know, I guess media and other homophobic propaganda, there was this idea in the 80s and 90s, and maybe some Americans remember it and maybe others don't, that gay Americans were, by virtue of being gay, involved in these unimaginable types of satanic rituals where they would target and assault and victimize young children usually. And of course, turned out that most of this was completely untrue, probably all of it was completely untrue. And usually those who were targeted were people who were either openly gay or suspected of being gay themselves, people who worked in daycare centers, etc. And so the story that spun out of these four women's life and around their lives was that they four were involved in some kind of satanic ritual or some kind of bizarre sexual ritual, and these two little girls, the nieces of one of the four women, were involved. Who made these accusations? How did these four women, if they were innocent, get convicted?
Yeah, so I'm sorry, cutting out a little bit there, but I think I got the gist of your question. So the outcry, as we would call it, comes from two little girls, but what we found through the investigation of the film is that it was rooted in, you know, kind of whispers from a family member who allegedly, and this is what the defense proposed in their trial, is man who was in love with the alleged ringleader and whose spurned advances really triggered a kind of disgust in the fact that this woman, Elizabeth Ramirez, was gay. So, you know, what it started off, I think, as a kind of angry allegation, you see quickly how those things unravel and turns into prosecution and then a media sensation. Sensationalized media that then also helps indict these women. And I should add that, you know, even though, you know, many of these individuals from this era weren't actually gay at all, what you were saying is right, is that the whisper of sexuality came up a lot. So, for example, the McMartin trials, which is in Los Angeles, in those trials, they were 60-year-old daycare workers. And during the sort of provocation of what allegedly happened was that, you know, they were having these rituals with each other. So I would say it's also deeply misogynistic, not just homophobic.
What did the court transcripts of the trial around these four women in your film Southwest of Salem, what did they show? Did they show rampant homophobia from sort of the prosecution, but even prospective jurors, et cetera?
Yeah, it's actually really interesting. It was so pernicious and systemic that, for example, I was just rereading the selection, what we call voir dire, and there were several jurors that actually admitted that they were really uncomfortable with the fact that Elizabeth, because the prosecution and the defense said, do you have problems with gay people? Three or four of those jurors said, yes, I do. And the court said, meaning the judge, Judge Machado, said, yes, but even though you have these feelings, do you still think that you could be unbiased in your assessment? Now, imagine if we came with a whole set of other prejudices now and somebody said that about race or about economics or about other. The fact that it was so systemic is what's so appalling, is that the court said, yeah, you know, I know you're admitting that you're gay, but I imagine you could be open enough to listen to this, you know, to this case. And that was sort of the root of the problem, the beginning of a problem. And in fact, one of the prospective jurors who was a gay man and who was a therapist came forward and said to the court, and it's on the record, says, I am really disturbed that you are not asking other jurors here if they hold a very pernicious belief that gay individuals are more predisposed to harming children. And the court says, you're dismissed. Wow. So it was like even one of the jurors brought it up who was a therapist and who was gay. So that was sort of the beginning of what I saw as a very deep, very subtle, but very, I mean, I believe, crucial in getting a fair trial.
I want to play for our audience the trailer of your documentary, Southwest of Salem, and then we'll learn about what has happened to these women today and the actions that people can take. Here is Southwest of Salem, the movie trailer.
Satanic cults. Satanic ritual abuse has become the fastest growing and most controversial psychological phenomenon in the country. It's a modern twist to an ancient story.
Investigated their world of covens and sacrifices.
This case is probably the last gasp of the satanic ritual abuse panic. Allegations were made that four young women had gang raped these two little girls.
My attorney said that I would lose. Nobody wants to go against a child.
The whole scenario sounds like a porn movie, a man's version of what women do in their spare time.
They got on the bed and they started touching me. What did they say? They were silent. It's too bizarre. It's almost dreamlike. The case, it went off track in about every way you could.
According to the people in court, this is what gay people do. No.
Forget about a little kid.
If this was an easy case, someone would have snapped it up a long time ago.
These are people's lives.
How did this get past the media, the jury, the appeals process, their defense lawyers?
Until we get the exoneration, we won't actually be free of any of this.
The modern version
of the witchcraft trials.
And that is the trailer of the documentary Southwest of Salem by my guest, Deborah Eskenazi. She is the Austin, Texas-based documentary filmmaker and director of Southwest of Salem. Now, at the heart of the story, of course, are the women themselves. They were so young when this happened to them. Their entire young adult lives were stolen, if you will. Tell us about these women. You spoke to them. It was heartbreaking to watch them talk about what had happened to them. And they thought, they just couldn't imagine that it has gone on for so long.
Yeah, so the four women were between the ages of 19 and 21 at the time. And two of the women actually had started a relationship and were co-parenting one of the women's children. And they weren't really out to their families. So they sort of had their friend Liz had this apartment, and they used Liz's apartment as a kind of safe haven, as, you know, sort of queer people of color in a time frame when and from families that weren't necessarily supportive of their life. And so, you know, the allegations really come massive surprise and, of course, take away now at this point 23 years of their lives. Like I said, the alleged ringleader received 37 and a half years, and the three other women received 15 years each in terms of sentences. But what was destroyed in the process was Elizabeth had a newborn son when she was carted off to prison. She talks about how she was still leaking milk after nursing her son when she was sent to jail. The three, you know, Cassie and Anna were raising two kids, and those kids end up having to stay with family members. So you know, finding a new home. And then one other, the fourth woman, Christy, was hoping to be a vet and had a full scholarship to a really good school, college. And of course, all of those dreams were taken away.
And I understand, and you show in this in your film that one of the alleged victims, now grown up, recanted her story. This is one of the two girls, the nieces of Liz, recanted her story. Shouldn't that have been enough to exonerate these four women?
You would think so. And it's interesting because when she first recanted to my cameras, I was like, wow, we have a new piece of evidence. Like, this is huge, you know? But actually what we come to discover is that recantations don't actually mean that much in a court of law. So I feel like, you know, what we thought was a critical piece of new evidence turns out that in a court of law doesn't have quite the big kind of, you know, impact that you think it would. But, you know, the other thing that comes up in the film is that a new piece of evidence shows up, too, to the table. And that is that the science, the alleged medical evidence that was used to indict these women, was debunked. So we find out that years later, a medical examiner gave an invalid testimony about the science of alleged trauma to the little girl's hymens. And that was huge because that science, that little piece of science, pediatric science, was used to indict other people. We see it, for example, in another case called the Fran and Dan Keller case.
So, was the pediatrician in this particular case of these four women, did she show herself to have homophobic views?
You know, I don't know, homophobic, definitely misogynistic in the sense that she was the one who wrote on her report possible satanic abuse. It is my argument and my belief that, you know, anybody who believes that four gay women would do such a thing and use their gayness as a way to say, well, that's why they did it, is extremely problematic.
Right.
And, you know, this era didn't have a lot of critical thought, you know, this era of the satanic panic. So we've seen a lot of people indicted, wrongfully so. And many of those cases did get turned on appeal. But, you know, I would argue that the reason these women fell through the cracks was because of their intersectional identities. They were Latina, they were lesbian, they were in Texas, you know, they were poor, they were forgotten. And so other bigger profile cases like the Memphis 3, for example, became sort of highlighted, but they did fall through the cracks.
So let's talk about where they stand today. I understand that they are out on bond, but their innocence, in the eyes of the law, they're still seen as guilty of this heinous crime.
Yes, exactly. So the way the procedure works is they were released from prison to face a new set of evidentiary hearings. And that was because this bill in Texas, this pivotal, like groundbreaking bill, is released that says, if you have been indicted of science that has now been debunked, you can come forward and have a new trial. So they did. They had a new trial. However, they had the same judge overseeing this new trial. It was the same judge that put them behind bars. And so there were a lot, there are a lot of enduring questions about whether or not that judge could be unbiased enough to stand in terms of, you know, these hearings.
So finally, where can people watch the film? I know that you have a website, southwestofsalem.com, where they can get more information about the film. For our Southern California audience, the film opens in Los Angeles on Friday, September 30th at the Lemley Music Hall. Does it have a wider set of screenings as well?
Yes, so we'll be in San Francisco, and we have other screens. I think we're on 20 other screens in the United States, but we're also having a really big broadcast on October 15th on the Discovery Channel. So I also, you know, we're going to be doing an outreach campaign that also is working with GLAAD in order to make sure that we're doing, you know, outreach and educational sort of push about these kinds of biases in court. Hmm.
Well, Deborah, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and for the work that you've put into creating this powerful documentary. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
Deborah Eskenazi is an Austin, Texas-based documentary filmmaker, radio producer, instructor, and journalist. She's the director of the new documentary, Southwest of Salem. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. You can also find us on Twitter at twitter.com/RUWithSonali.